Good morning. First case on calendar this morning is 75289, In Re Discipline of Luis Rojas. If the appellants are ready to proceed, please come forward. If you wish to reserve any time, please so state.
Good morning, Your Honor. David Clark for the respondent, Luis Rojas. I'd just like to reserve 5 minutes of my time. Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, Bar Counsel, may it please the Court. We are here before you on behalf of Mr. Rojas, who is here with us, because he wants to make right the wrongs that were committed on his watch. He wants a chance to resume the practice of law, to repay the money, and to restore the confidence in himself, in the profession, and in the bar. The panel, after a two-day hearing, made the recommendation that he should be allowed to apply for reinstatement, that he should practice for 5 years, and that he should repay the money, but at a rate of $13,000 a month, that he should have an audit done. We don't contest the fact that there should be a very rigorous audit function here. And a CPA review. But that at the end of that time, after that 5 years, that he's rebuilt his practice from nothing because he's on suspension, he then serves a two-year suspension and applies for reinstatement yet again. In their answering brief, the State Bar takes umbrage with even the two-year suspension and says it should be a four-year suspension. The State Bar also maintains that he should be required to pay back the money before he's allowed to apply for reinstatement. So they disagree with the panel on two fronts. We take issue, respectfully, with a couple of that points. The two-year suspension at the end of 5 years of practice, at the end of 5 years of repaying, amounts simply to punishment. It is not tied to public protection. It is not tied to edification of attorneys. It's a standalone two-year suspension at the end of all this time. As we set forth in our brief, discipline delayed is more often punishment than it is remediation, than it is rehabilitation, than it is public protection. We also disagree with the four-year suspension by the State Bar. They've offered no case authority in that regard. They've offered, as we said in our brief, the one outlier of the Montelongo plea agreement, which is not even a decision or case authority. We also disagree that he should be required to repay the money before seeking reinstatement. The panel didn't think so. Now, there are provisions in the rules where you have to repay the money before you are allowed to be reinstated, mainly if you steal the money, mainly if you are the cause of that money going out, and your suspension is a result of that misconduct. That's not the case here. He's already on suspension for another matter. But to require him to repay that money before seeking reinstatement on a non-lawyer's salary is not workable, and the panel also saw that, too. And finally, the repayment at $13,000 a month, I would submit is problematic for any practicing lawyer, particularly one who's restarting a practice. And that's a burden, I think, that sets him up to failure. He's here to make good on the lien holders who have lost their lien monies. He's here to satisfy their claims, because it's primarily not client money, it's lien holder money.
Mr. Clark, the evidence presented before the hearing part is that Ms. Gray, the rogue employee, did all this. Mr. Rojas was not complicit in any way with it, and she did it surreptitiously, and he didn't find out about it until later, and like that, when these problems started coming up with lien holders and others. Is that correct?
That is correct.
There was no evidence that he had anything to do with it. It was strictly this employee that embarked on this scheme here.
That's correct. I asked the State Bar investigator, I said, is there any evidence he took the money? And she said no. David Hanatsella, the certified fraud examiner who works at the public defender's office, he examined the records and he said no, there's no evidence Mr. Rojas took it. And then the district attorney for Clark County, after they got the case from Metro, did their own evaluation. And when they filed their criminal complaint, it was against Sari Gray and her 9 friends and family. It wasn't against Mr. Rojas. So I think three different investigators have passed on that.
Mr. Clark, I read the record slightly different from Justice Gibbons. You didn't really contest the violations as to safekeeping and responsibility regarding non-lawyer assistance?
We did not contest that. What we're here to discuss is...
And that Mr. Rojas didn't write the checks himself, the supervision of his people is at issue.
The checks were made out, he reviewed the checks, and he signed the checks. As best we can determine, once that was done, what Ms. Gray did, and David Hennigsall testified to this, is she destroyed those checks and had either a duplicate set of checks or...
I ask whether or not you were contesting those issues. I'm very familiar with the record. I'm very familiar with the lack of procedure in his office as a supervision of the keys for those secondary checks and things of that nature. Your argument, as I understood it, is as to what we do with Mr. Rojas under the circumstances.
I'm sorry, I misheard you. That is correct. As stated, this didn't happen in a vacuum. Mr. Rojas was temporarily suspended by this court May 1st of 2015. He was sentenced June 1st of 2015 in the federal matter and closed his office on June 6th. At that time, he testified he saw Sari Gray in his office. The next month, when problems came up, he immediately hired Mr. Ducharme, an investigator, who immediately hired David Hanexella, the certified fraud examiner, and he also immediately hired Larry Smith, determined that several hundred thousand dollars were missing. Mr. Smith's his report indicated that 19,000 computer files were destroyed. All the paper files were destroyed. They built their report in November of 2015. They went to Metro and presented it to Metro, who then did their own evaluation, turned it over to the DA, which filed a complaint in January of 2017. He also retained our firm to do a civil action against the nine co-conspirators and Sari Gray, and that is ongoing. In determining a sanction, we go through the four-step process from In re Lerner and the attorney's mental state. This is an act of omission, not an act of commission, as Justice Gibbons said. There's no evidence he actually got the money. One of the mitigating factors is no personal or dishonest motive on his part. We don't believe that there is deliberate or intentional theft or misconduct. The panel seems to feel that he knew or should have known. So that the ABA standard 4.12, that a suspension is warranted. The State Bar seems to support that. We would respectfully question whether he knew or should have known that the money was being mishandled at that time. He had safeguards in place. He reviewed all the checks. When the checks came back, they were for the same amount and the same check number. He had received no complaints from lien holders during this time.
What does the record currently show with respect to restitution that has been made so far?
He has made restitution to the clients. One of the clients in the complaint was Paul Advent. He's made restitution to him.
In what sum?
$20,000. $20,000. Sylvia Linares, I think it was $10,000. Terry Springer, $25,000. And that's about it at this point.
And what's the status of the suspension on the federal felony?
He's still suspended.
Okay, but didn't that sentence, the probation, expire? Is he still in the 18 months from our order?
Yeah, the 18 months has been served. He serves his probation. He can apply for reinstatement.
He can?
He can. He has to pay a $25,000 fine before he can apply for reinstatement. And as a practical matter...
With this, there's no sense in it.
Right, there's no sense in going through that process at this point.
But that period has expired, correct?
Yes. Yeah, he's been out for 3.5 years now.
Mr. Clark, one other issue, perhaps you could address as former bar counsel now in private practice. As you know, the penalties are de novo reviewed by the Supreme Court. We have final say on that. And a lot, we struggle with proportionality. I know pretty much we've been doing for most people, four-year suspensions, at least for these felony, for a lot of these federal felonies that have come up recently. This case, again, I think the concern maybe of the court is that it's a repeat. If Mr. Rojas had the problem with the other issue with the federal felony, then this came afterwards, although it was not, and it doesn't appear it was intentional in any way, as you've clarified, but how should we look at it in your view on proportionality and reviewing these punishments? What would your recommendation be to the court?
I would look at it, a couple of responses to that. The panel did not find that the federal conviction was a prior sanction or prior PAD act. It wasn't an aggravating factor. I think it was an overlay. Now, he did plead guilty to that. He did serve probation for that. And I think the original suspension was 18 months from this court. I'm going to answer that question. We think that in this case, it would be a state suspension similar to what the court did recently in Myers versus Gomel. Myers and Gomel, that was a one-year state suspension, and to repay the money. In terms of repaying the money, this court fashioned a remedy with Attorney Douglas Crawford to pay a portion or percentage of his income for that. We feel that a state suspension 2 to 4 years would be appropriate, allowing him to reapply and have to be reinstated, and then to pay the money back pursuant to perhaps what the reinstatement panel can drill down with him and come up with a mechanism for doing that. Or a four-year suspension concurrent with his current suspension, and he could apply for reinstatement in May of next year. And at that time, the reinstatement panel can also roll up its sleeves and say, okay, now how are you going to repay this money? Because it's all going to eventually come back here again. And we have to work this out. But as he stands here today, he wants the chance to do that. He wants the chance to make good. And he's been pursuing that ever since he discovered this, with every effort and asset he has. Thank you.
Justice and Justices, may it please the Court, Dan Hoagie for the State Bar of Nevada. It's an honor to be before you today. The issue in this case is whether or not the Court should approve the disciplinary panel's recommendation for suspension, specifically the suspension for 2 years. Now, the panel did find violations of two rules, Rule 1.15, the safekeeping, and 5.3, responsibilities regarding non-lawyer assistance. I think the first issue I wanted to address is with regard to both rules and the knowledge. Now, if you look under ABA Standard 4.12, when you have knowledge plus any injury, it should be suspension. Now, in the ABA guidelines, it mentions that knowledge can be either that the appellant knew or that the appellant should have known based on the circumstances, based on the red flags that appeared throughout the incidents in this case.
What red flags specifically? How sophisticated was this scheme?
This was very thoroughly vetted and addressed in the hearing. Specifically, when you start off, Mr. Rojas claims that when he hired Ms. Gray, that he ran a criminal background check. Now, he claims that he found nothing. We know that she did have a felony criminal record at that time, including felonies of fraud and other crimes of dishonesty and moral turpitude. So we know that they existed, but he didn't find it. Right? Then, in 2013, Christmas, in December, he has some suspicions. And so he runs a background check again, and then he discovers that she does have those felony crimes. And so I think it was really well put by Chairman Litt, the panel chairman. He stated, so let me ask you, you said you did a background check, found no criminal activity. Then you found criminal activity. Didn't that kind of set you off? Like she must have given you false information so that you couldn't find anything and now you find something? I mean, what kind of person would you allow to work for you like that? And then Mr. Rojas responded, you know what? That was a very stupid move. Mr. Chairman Litt said, we're dealing with trust accounts. Stupidity doesn't count. And so at that point, we also know that Ms. Gray had already stolen from Mr. Rojas' trust account, from the appellant's trust account.
But how was she making the theft? As I understand the facts, Rojas was signing checks. He thought he was signing the correct checks, and then they would be destroyed, and the new checks would be issued, and she would sign them. Is that the scam? I think that's what Justice Perriger is asking.
Right. So if you look at the record, this was also thoroughly vetted before the panel. And the testimony from appellant was, I reviewed all of the checks. But you can pull up the checks. If you look at the record, the checks are in the record, from about 797 through about 1,118. You can flip through all the checks. Now, if you look at the signatures on the checks, all but about a dozen, and we're talking hundreds of checks, all but a dozen are almost identical, right? Not similar, identical.
Mr. Hoagie, wasn't it that the checks, Mr. Rojas gave the checks to be distributed, those were destroyed, and then a computer signature was used to issue them to her cohorts? So it's a pretty sophisticated kind of little scam. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And then at some point, the bank either she was taking the canceled checks out of the bank statement. Mr. Rojas, at least from the testimony that I read, thought maybe the bank wasn't sending those anymore or something. But so the checks that you're talking about that had similar signatures, it's not really evidence in the record that Mr. Rojas saw those checks.
But, yeah, what I'm saying is respondent's theory, appellant in this situation, their theory was that he reviewed all the checks and signed them, and then Ms. Gray tore those up or whatever and printed off a new check with the same amount and sent that to a friend or family member. Right? But what I'm saying is the record, other than the testimony from respondent or appellant in this case, did not agree with that. And the panel reviewed that, and it's my contention that the panel rejected that factual.
Let me ask you this. You said the checks were in the same amount as the ones that he saw. Is that correct?
Well, that was appellant's theory, correct.
And how would he know, based upon any reconciliation, if he's getting a bank statement that says check number 1001 was made for $4,000? He saw that check, but it doesn't show who the check was paid to. It shows a check number and an amount. How would he get clued into that?
Well, I think if his theory is correct, I would agree. It would be very difficult to find. The difference is when you look at the record, and what the bar pointed out was all of these checks, when you look at them, there were not very many checks missing. And so we don't believe, the state bar does not believe that his theory is correct.
Missing or out of sequence.
Right, missing or out. There was.
So your point is there were too many checks stamped for overhead routine stuff that his testimony that he was signing everything himself doesn't hold water. Is that your point?
That's my point. If Ms. Gray had presented him with a correct check, later voided that check, and then provided a forged check to her associate, then there would be at least 90 voided checks, 90 missing checks, because we know that 90 checks were paid out to co-conspirators. But there weren't 90 missing checks.
Yeah, it was just 34.
There was at most 34. And so that's why we disputed during the hearing, we disputed their theory of the case. Our dispute was his theory does not hold water. We don't agree with it, and the panel agreed with the bar.
Can I ask you to comment on, it strikes me as very unusual that you, if the goal of discipline is to protect the public, the panel recommendation is to put Mr. Rojas back in the saddle and have him practice law so that he can earn money to make restitution, putting other people at risk, if you're correct on the facts. And then after, if he succeeds in making restitution, he has a 2-year suspension to serve as the reward for that restitution. That strikes me as inconsistent with the purpose of bar discipline. And if the panel is comfortable putting him back to work, how does that square with what you're saying about the record in the case? Long question. I hope you followed it.
Oh, thank you, Justice Pickering. I actually agree with you 100%. I think the panel's heart was in the right place. But in this situation, when you have restitution, you have these competing interests. And the competing interest is we need to protect the public. We need to provide that restoration. I mean, that's what restitution is. We're restoring that them back. But also, you have the lawyer who has a limited ability to pay. And so we have to kind of marry those together and find a middle ground. I think that's what they tried to do. They knew that suspension was appropriate. And if you look at the ABA guidelines, suspension is absolutely appropriate. But they didn't know how to work that together. And so their heart was in the right place. I agree wholeheartedly that if you're going to put someone back and then suspend them later, that would be more punitive.
And could you speak to the issue of proportionate sanctions in this case or suspension? We know what the panel asked for. The bar's position is harsher. Mr. Clark has advocated for something else. What is your position as to proportionality?
Yeah. My position is, this is a very serious matter. When you look at the ABA standards, you look at mental state, and the mens rea defense, that was a major defense, and the panel rejected it. So you look at mental state, they said it was knowing. And so you have those three tiers. You have the intentional, you have the knowing, and then you have the negligent. So they said it was middle tier. Now, when you also look at injury, they said it was also high tier. Okay, this wasn't, there's either no injury, there's injury, or there's substantial injury. This was substantial injury. You're talking about $750,000 that clients and the public lost.
And that was over a 3-year period, right?
Correct. And so that's substantial injury. So when you look at the mental state, and the injury, you got mid-level mental state and you got high-level injury, that has all the signs of a baseline suspension. He has been suspended before. There are several aggravating factors. Now, there are some mitigating factors as well, including his health and other factors, but he's been an attorney for a long time. He knew better. And so suspension is absolutely appropriate. He's already been suspended 4 years. So when you're talking about proportionality, we believe that 4 years, again, would be appropriate because of the substantial injury, because of the mental state, the knowing mental state that was found, it is appropriate.
Let me ask you this. Mr. Clark made a recommendation of imposing 4 years concurrent with his current suspension, which would put him up for reinstatement in May. What's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, anytime you run something concurrent and it's not the same transaction or occurrence, I mean, you're really sending a message. And I think the message to the community and the public is, we take this act seriously. And so if you run it concurrent with the previous suspension, the criminal conduct, he's convicted in federal court, then you run the risk of telling the public, sending that message out there to the public and to the members of the bar that, you know, we're running those together. It's not as big a deal here.
Let me ask you this. What message are you sending, putting him back into practice now for a period of time and then suspending him 2 years after he's paid his restitution? Yeah. Doesn't that kind of undercut that argument?
Yeah, I agree. I do not agree with the panel's recommendation of a stayed suspension with restitution and then...
So what do we do with this?
Well, I think a suspension... A current suspension is appropriate, not stayed, not run concurrent, and he be ordered to pay restitution to his financial ability. I think that's the key. That's the middle ground that the panel was trying to seek. If he doesn't have the financial ability to pay $150,000 a year, then he doesn't pay $150,000 a year. He pays to his financial ability. If he can only pay $15,000 a year, then so be it. After his suspension is over, he can reapply even if he hasn't fully paid the $800,000. But then once he starts practice, he needs to pay to his full financial ability. And I think that would be the most appropriate sanction in this case. I just really briefly, I've only got a minute, just with regard to, you know, there has been some restitution. But if you look at the mitigating factors, it states timely and in good faith. And so when you talk about restitution, it's got to be timely and it's got to be in good faith. In this case, for example, we'll talk about Mr. Advent. And Mr. Advent was sued by his creditors because he didn't have enough money to pay the creditors because that money was stolen by an associate of Mr. Rojas. In response to that suit, he settled and gave that creditor his Harley-Davidson motorcycle. So you ask yourself, is it timely? Was that proactive or was that reactive? Certainly that was reactive because it was in response to litigation. And was it in good faith? Again, when you're talking about good faith, you look at whether or not that was something that... he feels sorry about, he feels remorse about, and then he proactively seeks that. And, you know, providing a motorcycle in response to a litigation for settlement, I don't think that's timely or in good faith. And so,
not in bad, if you don't have money and you give up a motorcycle, I mean, that's not necessarily bad faith. I mean, I guess I'm not understanding your point there.
It's great. Restitution is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying what he did was improper. I'm saying there's a limit to mitigation. If you go out and you proactively find your people that have been harmed and you go help them, that's different than if in response to litigation or in response to the grievance, then you go out and try to fix it for other reasons. So that's different. When you look at all the people that have been harmed, you got Mr. Advent, who was a family friend, who Mr. Rojas helped settle his case with the Harley-Davidson. Is that timely and in good faith when you help out a family friend, but you've got dozens of other injured parties? And so I think that's problematic.
Mr. Hoagie, Chief, may I ask another question? Just to be clear. It's a bookkeeper is the person doing the stealing. When it came to Mr. Rojas's attention, whether it's timely to his attention or inattention, went longer than it should have, he promptly reported that to police, reported her to the police, participated in the investigation, got a forensic account, and did those things. Is that correct? Is that a correct statement of the record?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to respond to a couple points. First of all, as to the mechanics of this, the only one who testified was the certified fraud examiner, David Hanexella, along with Mr. Rojas. And it was his testimony that's in the record that you could make a color copy of the checks and it doesn't show the void watermark. And so we don't exactly know what happened, but she would make the copy, fill out the copy and give it to him. And then she still had the original, which she would fill out for the correct amount. So it's not like there would be 91 missing checks, those numbers. She made a duplicate of the check, because when it came back to the bank statement, same check number, same amount. That's how that works. There was also other investigative evidence that she may have had a whole other set of checks made from QuickBooks. But we never quite got that. But remember that regardless of the safeguards he had, she enlisted 9 other family and friends who all actively agreed to launder this money, who all engaged in criminal conduct. And that can defeat a lot of safeguards when you have 10 people who are willing to do this. As to the red flags, in 2013, he actually found out his sister said, here, this is her criminal record. And he called her probation officer. He said, no, she's a good probationer. She's okay. He called her attorney, Bill Terry, who said, well, it's going to be reduced to a misdemeanor at the end. So he didn't ignore it. He looked into it. He investigated it. And he candidly admits, he goes, I was stupid to keep her. But at that point, he just knew she had a criminal record at that point. At that point, he didn't know she was taking money then. So I mentioned, this is not really a theory as to how this happened. This is the only testimony in the record as to how this happened. And as Justice Stigler said, it's a pretty sophisticated scheme. And he's done everything he can to bring her to justice as much as he can. As to the proportionality, I mentioned that it was just published this month in the Nevada Lawyer, the Myers and Gomel case. That was $1 million. And that was a one-year state suspension with 18 months to repay. But they had an ongoing practice, and they'd already started to make repayments. He's starting from zero. And as Bar Counsel pointed out, his ability to repay is what should be the metric for his repayment. We frankly agree with that. What he can do, and he can go to the lien holders, and he can ask them, this is what your lien was. What can I pay to you to make this good? And then he pays that amount. He makes them good.
So what is it exactly you would ask us to impose?
I would ask for a 2-year suspension.
Examples. I mean, this is, other people look at this and they want to assess how vigorous should I be in managing my bookkeepers on my trust accounts. We have a theft of $800,000 or $750,000. Over a long period of time, and we have prior discipline. So with that in mind, what would be the appropriate discipline in this case?
I think it's important to continue the court's theme that we may be able to disagree on fault or blame, but we don't disagree on responsibility, and you're responsible for that. And so you have to repay and make those monies good. That's the first thing. I believe he should be allowed to apply for reinstatement, and he has to pass muster in that regard. I think he should then be required to repay as best he can, as best, and if he can negotiate something with them to do that, then I think that makes them whole in a civil setting. And that there be a state suspension, 2 years, 4 years, but that it gets vacated if he completes this process. Alternatively, like I proffered, the court imposes a 4-year suspension for this act, separate, to run concurrent. And then again, he has to apply for reinstatement, and then that reinstatement panel says, okay, now we've got to deal with this money and how you're going to repay it as a condition of your reinstatement, which dovetails, I think, the defensible and proper designs of the panel and recommendation that, look, you get him back in, but he's got to take responsibility for this. So that's what we would suggest.
So how far apart are the two of you?
I don't know if we were that far apart at all, except he would not want it to run concurrent. He wanted to run consecutive, I guess, from today forward.
So that's the point of difference.
Which is now 7 years.
Okay.
And I don't think that protects the public or makes the victims whole.
So what if you stayed all but that period of time that would otherwise pass between now and May?
I'm sorry, could you?
If you stayed, if he's recommending 4 years consecutive, could you impose 4 years consecutive and stay all but 7 months? Suspension would run.
His suspension has already run for the first one.
On the 4-year concurrent, I thought you said it would last until May.
If it's retroactive to temporary.
Got it.
That was my point.
Anything additional?
Your Honor, thank you very much.
Thank you. I failed to note at the beginning Justice Cherry is not participating in the decision on this matter. Thank counsel for their arguments and their attempt to enlighten us as to proportionality in this particular case and what is appropriate in light of protecting the public and participation by Mr. Rojas. This matter will stand submitted.